Good afternoon. I am the Reverend Darcy Baxter. I serve our congregation in Modesto, California, and I've been a longtime reproductive justice activist. And this week, love has had some big wins this week, huh? Yeah. Yeah. And we gather today because we want love to keep on winning. I know my heart yesterday was holding this huge win for gay marriage, holding the wins for affordable health care. And that happened on a day when the Unitarian Universalist Association, which I believe is the first religious tradition to make some kind of commitment to reproductive justice, nearly unanimously voted to commit themselves to reproductive justice. Right? And that happened on a day which would have been the 13th birthday of Tamir Rice. The day where the memorial for the Reverend Clementa Pinckney happened. Our hearts are so full. So let us take a moment and take a big breath, because there's a lot. And I want us to gather in. We're going to spend some time celebrating, some time contemplating, some time committing ourselves to making sure that love keeps on winning. And when I think about reproductive justice, I've struggled a long time with my own role in it as a WASPy young woman working in relationship to a movement that comes out of the experiences of Black and brown women. I always have been doing this work on figuring out what is the right way to relate. And the words of Alice Walker have helped me in this. Comes out of her work In Search of Our Mother's Gardens. I believe the truth of any subject comes out when all sides of the story are put together, and all their different meanings make one new one. Each writer writes the missing parts of the other writer's story, and the whole story is what I am after. That's keep on keeping on to the whole story.
Good afternoon. My name is the Reverend Rob Keith, and I do faith and race and reproductive health rights and justice organizing work in Washington, D.C., primarily with Planned Parenthood, Federation of America. And my job is to kick off the celebration portion of our service today by giving 50 years of UU history on these issues in 5 minutes. When the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations General Assembly in 1963 became the first denomination to pass a statement in favor of abortion rights, UUs had already been very active in the struggle for family planning for 3 decades. And the 60s brought an unprecedented expansion of Unitarian Universalist activism and general activism on issues of birth control and abortion. And it was also the decade where we conceived of the About Your Sexuality program, deciding that if public schools were not going to provide sufficient sexuality education to our youth, that we had a responsibility to provide that in our own congregations. The 70s and 80s saw an incredible expansion in the rise of the far right. The far right that was organized, in fact, based on the Bob Jones University desire for racial segregation, but only ended up using abortion because it was more of a winning issue for them. The 90s and aughts saw a huge entrenchment of our movement as we tried to keep the women entering clinics, the people working at clinics, safe, and we were not always able to do so. And Jim Barrett gave his life, a Unitarian Universalist gave his life for this work. His wife, June, was injured, and their daughter is sitting here with us today. But in the 2000s and beyond, Unitarian Universalism started to step up in some exciting new ways. We jumped into the LGBT struggle that was first LG, still working on the B, still working on the T movement. But we're very active in the struggle for military service as an option for LGBT people, for the right of same-sex couples to adopt, and for marriage equality. We increased our focus on immigration, we increased our focus on multi-faith organizing, and in 2009, we launched the Standing on the Side of Love campaign to bear witness in a public way that didn't always need to be tied back to UUism, against all forms of oppression, giving us a flexible power, public presence that we could use in relationship with others. Most recently, just for the last few years, immigration has continued to be a huge focus. And when Ferguson erupted, we responded. Many of our congregations, perhaps not as many as we would hope, embracing the Black Lives Matter movement and seriously wrestling with how as a denomination can we look at this work we've done for marriage equality and other issues and make our work on multiracial justice organizing that vibrant and that powerful. And with this recent statement on reproductive justice, we weave many of these strands together: positive sexuality, civil rights, racial justice, economic justice, immigration. And so I just want to close with a paragraph from the statement that we adopted yesterday. The world we envision includes social, political, legal, and economic systems that support everyone's freedom of reproductive choice and expression of gender identity and sexuality, especially the most vulnerable and marginalized. In such a world, all communities are places of equality, abundance, and safety, free from violence, oppression, and hazardous environments. This world includes access to safe, affordable, and culturally and developmentally appropriate childcare and healthcare. In our vision, everyone has access to accurate information about sexuality and family planning, and safe, healthy, and culturally sensitive reproductive health services. Amen.
My name is Mandy Restivo. I'm a lay leader who works on reproductive justice issues, and I have a call and response section for us. I'm going to read a statement, and after I read the statement, you're all going to say, "We stand with you in love." And this reading is adapted from Reverend Kelly Clement's Litany of Support. So again, your line is, "We stand with you in love." For all the caregivers, medical professionals and volunteers, doctors, nurses, escorts, counselors, teachers, clergy, who give of their time and stand in harm's way to fight for reproductive equity with their very bodies, may you know in the stillness of your heart the value of your service to us all. We stand with you in love. For the lawmakers, judges, activists, lobbyists, and their staffs who hold the responsibility for real lives in your hands, may you know in the stillness of your heart the joy born of widening circles of love.
We stand with you in love.
For all the families, partners, children, parents, and friends who stand with others as they face difficult pregnancies, or lapses in financial or medical or physical security, may you know in the stillness of your heart the gentle passage of time and the reassurance of community. For all those who have faced, who are facing, or who will face unwanted or difficult pregnancies, the threat of harm from those you love, and the often uncertain oppression based on gender identity, may you know in the stillness of your heart your highest calling. For all those who have loved beyond the mainstream, whose affections and partnerships and parenthoods are acts of defiance, a revolution and liberation, may you know in the stillness of your heart that your life will bear gifts beyond our knowing.
We stand
for all those whose lives have been lost or terrorized by racial violence, for those whose families have been shattered by deportation or murder or poverty, may you know in the stillness of your heart the promise of God and the generous recognition of strangers. For those in our lives in need of kindness, whose bodies and souls simultaneously hold brokenness and the sublime, whose hearts have found cause for resilience and gladness, whose each step forward is a courageous act of hope, may you know in the stillness of your heart that
we stand with you.
So now I'm just going to invite you to call out the names of people into the space with whom do you stand in love? Who brought you to this moment, to your sense of gender and racial justice? Or someone with whom you celebrate today? So just feel free to say the names of those people out loud. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Andrea Newell. I'm a music leader at the First Unitarian Universalist Church of San Diego. And I was asked to just give you a little bit of information about the instrument that will be woven into your afternoon today. So this is a Native American flute. It is indigenous to cultures across South America and North America. It's not specific to one particular tribe or nation. But there are, in fact, flutes like this with five or six holes all across the world in indigenous cultures. And they're just, the style of playing is a little bit differently and the carving is a little different in the different countries. But what's most interesting about this, and the reason I brought it today, is that it's improvisational. So you don't play sheet music, you play what's in the room. You play with the breath, your own spirit and breath, and to reflect what's happening around you. So.
Thank you, Andrea. My name is Jess Halper, and I work for the UUA's office in Washington, D.C. And I'm wondering if you all have with you, if you picked up when you came in, a piece of fabric or ribbon or yarn. Does everybody have one of those? If you don't have one, can you raise your hand or run back to the table and grab one? There are many, many to choose from, so please choose one that resonates with you. There's some people over here. Right, there's more on the table too. Cool. So I invite you to take this piece of material. Does everybody have one? Yeah. I invite you to take it in your hand and just notice it. What does it look like? What does it feel like? Is it heavy or is it light? What color is it? Are there more than one color? What about it appeals to you? What do you like about it? I'm wondering if this length of material can reflect to you something about your place in the struggle for reproductive and sexual justice. What about its texture or its color or its composition says something about what you have been able to offer to these movements? Is it something about the way it's woven together? Something about the way it sparkles? Something about its strength? What resonates with you in your experience of the reproductive or sexual justice movements? What are you proud of having done in the struggle for gender equity, for racial equity, or for reproductive freedom? When have you brought others joy, new ideas, safety, or a sense of freedom? What have you done? And how does this piece of material, how does that echo it in itself? I'm wondering if you can hold your yarn up, because we've all done things. I wonder if you can show people what you've done, how it's representative. Can you look around the room? Can you see? Who has a similar yarn to you? Who has something different? Who might have contributed something similar to you? Who might have contributed something different? Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is the Reverend Megan Lloyd Joyner, and I come to you from the small but great state of Connecticut. I was surprised by how big a grain of rice could be. That was all there was by the time they told us that there would be no baby. It was 2 weeks before Christmas 2012, and there should have been a heartbeat and a little lima bean, but there was just a grain of rice. I strained to see it on the blurry black and white image, all the more obscured by those tears that would not stop. I convinced myself that I had seen it. It was important somehow to see it, because that little grain of rice was all I had of the baby that I had wanted so badly. And seeing it made it all real. The love that I had already expanded my heart. I had been pregnant for 2 months. And so seeing it made real that life I had imagined. The child I could already feel in my arms. It was tiny, but it was so big. And that surprised me. As long as I can remember, I had argued against the idea that life began at conception. As a teenage pro-choice activist in Catholic school, as a clinic escort in college, as a liberal religious advocate in Washington, D.C., I had always insisted on embryo and fetus as opposed to baby. So I was surprised when 3 weeks after we saw our grain of rice and my body finally let go of my dreams, I wept fiercely, crying out not because of the physical pain, but because it felt like my heart would burst. My spouse was by my side, and I leaned into him, a mockery of labor. And after all those years of insistence, there were no other words. "I want my baby back," I cried. 2 months later, I found myself in the center of a circle of my colleagues at a gathering of ministers in their first year of ministry. I wasn't going to talk about my miscarriage. It was a professional meeting. And there was plenty else to share about my first year of ministry. But as you might expect, it all came out there in the center of the circle. My grief and the surprise of the force of it. My guilt. What if it was something I had done? My fear. What if it happens again? And my frustrated humility. I am accustomed to controlling things in my life. So why couldn't I control this? And the secret shift in my cosmology and my new belief that a little soul was waiting somewhere to come to us. And those ministers laid their gentle hands on my shoulders and my head and my knees and my feet, and they prayed over me. They invoked a loving greatness as vast as the universe that would hold me and would hold that baby until the end of time. They honored my grief and prayed that I would know that nothing about this was my fault, that I might be gentle with myself, that I might rest my body and my mind and my wounded heart and let go of needing to make anything happen. And they echoed my hopes. They prayed that that little soul that was meant to be our child might arrive in due time. Their touch was as important as their words. Tears rolled down my face. I had felt so broken. Through those healing hands and precious prayers, I began to feel whole again. None of us knew then that I was already carrying another grain of rice.
So at this time last year in General Assembly, I was 9 months pregnant. Very different experience. And we want to talk today a little bit as ministers from New Orleans about growth. I now have a 10-month-old, and it is a joy to see Sebastian's growth. But his growth also came with growing pains. As he grew, there were times that were difficult. There are moments of frustration. And yet, I have this wonderful, healthy, smart baby boy. And we want to talk a little bit today, too, about the growth of Unitarian Universalist work in reproductive justice this year and how that growth came out of something very painful and how we are continuing to grow.
Just ministering the stories and the stories. There's a worship service and we celebrate. And we assume that everyone here is here to worship. But on a very particular day in New Orleans, some of the visitors were actually practicing their newly learned techniques as fundamental anti-abortion activists, entering into a congregation and in the midst of meditation and prayer, standing up and beginning to scream hate and invective. And never doubt, friends, that the universe is wise and has a wicked sense of humor. For it turns out that the very first voice, that blonde-haired, blue-eyed woman who stood up and called me an instrument of Satan, sending children to hell for a liberal religious faith. Her name's Deanna, just like mine. And friends, I was raised Pentecostal Church of God, and I was reminded on that day that my faith saves me. It saves me every day from the sin of white supremacy, the sin of patriarchy, the sin of heterosexism, every oppression that our faith calls us to stand in love with and against. It's salvation. Another word, collective liberation. And that moment served as a catalyst for our faith in the greater New Orleans region, I think beyond, to start connecting the dots, to connect the dots beyond choice, beyond rights, to justice, to human rights, to the rights of all, the call of love, to open us up to each other, to break our hearts, not to pieces, but open wider and wider, so that even in the midst of that chaos, we could say faithfully, if you can be here respectfully, you can be here. And if you can't, we respectfully invite you past the threshold where you can exercise your First Amendment right on the sidewalk. Right? We learned healthy boundaries. We learned how to be loving and inclusive and not abused. Right? We learned how to stand together. And in fact, the youth from the UU College of Social Justice Program, they were commissioned that day as leaders. They said we didn't know there was going to be a final exam. I gave them all A pluses. They all got A pluses. They took hands. They took hands, and we'll invite you now to take hands. And they circled around. They circled. They rose in body and in spirit, and they circled around the sanctuary. And with their own lives, they delineated beloved community. They circled around. We're almost to a circle. Circle-ish. Circle round. And as the universe would have it, that day we had sang Circle Round for Freedom as part of the story for all ages. And I invite you now to join in, to circle round for freedom, circle round for peace, for all of us in prison, circle for release, circle for the planet, circle for each soul, for the children of our children, keep the circle whole. Friends, on that day in July, and every day since, love wins.
So
So as you take your seats, I'll invite you to take up that piece of yarn or fabric or ribbon or whatever it is, and just hold it in your hand as we take a breath together. Where does justice live in your body? Where does it live in your body? Where do you feel love or grief or yearning in your body? Do you feel it in your hands, in your face, or in your shoulders? Where does love live in you? Where does justice live in your body? Does it live in your shoulders or in your feet or in your gut? Invite the tiredness, the sadness, the excitement, the celebration, the joy. Invite all of it. Invite all of it. And as you feel them in your body, I invite you to let them flow down your arms and be held in that piece of material. Feel it in your shoulders or in your face. And let it come down and rest in this piece of fabric, in this ribbon, yarn. This material, which has also symbolized your contributions to movements for justice, it also holds the reality of our experience as humans, our love and respect for each other that we carry very physically in the world. I invite you to tie a knot or two in the fabric for the times that you have felt loss or grief or invasion as you've been part of these movements for justice. And I invite you to tie a knot or two in the fabric for the times you have felt incredible joy and hope as we have labored together so that love may win. Hold it gently. Let your pulse warm and change it. As we move forward in this service, we look gratefully to our local community partners here in Portland who work in the reproductive justice movement and beyond. They have a lot to teach us, and we are grateful that they are here to offer what they know. Lisa?
Hi everyone, my name is Lisa Summers, and I am really, really happy to be standing before you. I'm a bit nervous because I've never spoken in front of so many people at the same time, so please bear with me. I have a small story to tell about myself, and it greatly depends upon our acceptance of how my story will end. I happen to be transgender, and during a period when I thought that being transgender was going to be the greatest thing in my life, it ended up being one of the worst things at all. I'm going to take you back a little bit. I was born a child of hatred, okay? My mom was an alcoholic, my dad was an alcoholic, and a heroin junkie. Through that, there were four children produced, two of which are passed away now. And they passed away while I was in prison. I happened to do an 8.5-year prison sentence. When I got out of prison, everything that I thought that was going to block me from becoming the new me was gone. one of which was my brother and the other was my sister. Little did I know that this transition would break me apart from everybody. I lost all my friends, I lost my family members, and I lost the greatest person of my life, and that was my mom. And through these, I don't mean that I lost them by death, but I lost them because I chose a path which they couldn't understand. In 2011, I decided that life had given up on me, and I visited the First Unitarian Church, which I had never done before, and I had a chance to speak with one of the preachers at the time, who told me indirectly that being Unitarian, First Unitarian or Unitarian Universalist, that they didn't believe in hell. And this is something that always kept me from committing suicide. Unfortunately, this information was a newfound discovery for me, and I went home that same afternoon and tried to commit suicide. I failed, thank you God, I failed. And it was through the Unitarian Church that I found a new beginning in myself. I found people who actually loved me and taught me love, something that I didn't know. I was able to connect in a community that accepted me for who I was. I woke up this morning, I was trying to find something to wear. And for the life of me, I don't have a lot of clothes. But I was trying to find something to wear to be decent. And it dawned on me that I'm going to a Unitarian event. If I can't be accepted there by the people who love me, I can't be accepted anywhere. Right? My part of reproductive justice is just, it's a new life within myself. And it's something that I ask that we all carry over for people who we don't know or understand. Whether it's their choice in their gender markers, whether it's mental health difficulties, whether it's drug and alcohol addiction, we all have a part to give to one another. And I would like to say, standing here, if it hadn't been for the Unitarian Church, I wouldn't be here today. I ask that we carry our love and our belief over to everyone that we meet at all times, because we never know what's going to happen and what our love and our lives can do to help the lives of so many others. I don't have 5 minutes worth of talk to do, but I thank you for allowing me to be here today and being able to talk and share with you.
Hello, everyone. My story actually started on the East Coast. I was raised in Virginia. I am the youngest of 3.5 siblings. And I actually left. I kind of ran away. I had just turned 18 years old, and my family fell apart. I came from an abusive, very dysfunctional household. And when I turned 18, I just realized that whatever I wanted to choose to be in life, I couldn't get there if I was so close to my family. And I headed west. The wild frontier. Didn't know what Oregon was, but this is where I ended up. And my first experience in Oregon was really out of body. I stayed with a friend. He had a dad who lived in Albany, Oregon, which is a few hours from here. And after that first day, we were actually not allowed to come back. And when I asked my friend what happened, my friend told me that his dad was racist and didn't like black people. And that's why I couldn't be allowed back in the house. And I wasn't upset, I wasn't infuriated. For me, you know, growing up on the East Coast, it was like I found out someone still had a Walkman. Like, that happens? That still happens? So it was perplexing. That was my experience. But what's really sad is because people keep having Walkmans everywhere I go. And, you know, at some point, it just becomes sad. Coming to Oregon, coming to Portland, I've been here now six years. Within about half a year of me first coming to Portland, I came in October. By February, I remember I was transported into one of the churches in North Portland, in Portland's historic black neighborhood, and we were all there gathered, enraged community members, because we just had Aaron Campbell, who had been shot by the police. His brother had died earlier that day because of a medical condition. He was going through a mental health crisis. His girlfriend called the police because she thought that he was going to be suicidal. And instead of him taking his life, the police were there to take it for him. And he was unarmed. He's a young black man. And we've seen so much happen since then. We've seen it at a local level. We've seen this loss. We've seen it at a national level, whether it's been Tamir Rice, whether it's been Trayvon Martin, whether it's been Eric Garner, and so many other names, so many other names. And it was just really perplexing for me to be in Portland, be here for 6 years, and know how much we proclaim to be a liberal community. And for me, it's so hard to see how can we be so liberal in our ideals and talk about how inclusive we are, but we see the people who suffer most continue to suffer more and more. You know, just even a few blocks from here, over at the Rose Quarter Moda Center, this was Portland's historic black community. And we saw through urban renewal, we saw through gentrification, through forced displacement, we saw that government recognized that there was community vitality here and intentionally destroyed that so that others could benefit from from this land and these resources. We saw Highway 99 West get built. We saw the urban renewal federal dollars invested to build this Coliseum. We saw hundreds and hundreds of houses completely destroyed and these people with nowhere to go. And from there, it went straight up through North Portland. We had expansions on Williams, where they afforded dollars to people from outside the community to do speculation. The hospital, Emmanuel Hospital, came in, devastated blocks of housing and businesses and churches. And you can go there now. Legacy Emmanuel still owns this land, and there's nothing there. So we've destroyed and have nothing to show for it. This completely translates to racialized state violence, because even though the impacts of gentrification and displacement aren't as overt, we're not seeing these major expansions happening in Portland anymore, we still are seeing the loss of community, we're seeing the disrespect of lives happening every day, especially lives of black people and people of color every single day. And even me, in my experience, where I don't come from here, I come from the East Coast, I'm finishing my final year of school. I have a high school diploma. I've been able to sit on a number of boards and committees and work with nonprofits, work with elected officials. I can have the mayor on speed dial. Just a few months ago, I was riding a streetcar, and I tried to alert the streetcar operator that there was a burning smell, and the streetcar operator actually called 911 on me because I was a hostile, aggressive person. Black person, coded language, and I was arrested riding in the streetcar. And it was so strange for me to see how I could be violated in that way, even now to see that my power was taken from me, or I didn't have a choice to continue to be just a law-abiding, respectful citizen and ride the public transportation that I paid for. That's just my own experience. I'm lucky that I could just be here and talk about how hard it is to live with just being arrested when there's so many people who can't even just live. This has so much to do with reproductive justice. This has to do with the fact that we're seeing so many mothers lose that choice of having their daughter and their son around. We're seeing so much of our communities being torn apart, and they don't have a choice to stop it because their allies are off worrying about so many other things. And it's really heartbreaking, because even in Oregon, there is a movement for people of color to work on reproductive justice. And Oregon is known for being the state with the most protections for any kind of reproductive justice issue. And so it seemed like a no-brainer when communities of color came together, NARAL Pro-Choice came together, Planned Parenthood came together, and talked about a comprehensive women's health bill that looked at protections for transgender people, that looked at cultural competency for people of color. Should have sailed right through the legislature, but it didn't. And what was really interesting about this bill was that the communities of color really fought to have language using the word abortion in there, because one of the biggest issues that they deal with reproductive justice is stigma. And the ability for them to uplift this word and try to destigmatize it is so important to see how communities of color can be to embrace this issue in a more inclusive manner. But the lawmakers in our state decided it was too controversial, and they really didn't want to have their name tagged to abortion. They didn't want mailers with their name on it saying abortion, even though they passed all other kind of bills relating to reproductive justice and reproductive health. Now the word abortion was on there, and they let it die. And that just happened just a few weeks ago. And there's just so much intersectionality for me to talk with you today, but that's why we're here. You know, we know that we live in a society where there are two different narratives, and we have to listen to those narratives. We have to realize that, you know, we all come with a lot of privileges, and if we really are going to have reproductive justice for everybody, we really need to change the narrative, we need to change the system, and we need to look within ourselves. But we also have to be able to go out in the community, go out there and be in areas that are comfortable to us, you know, talk with people who might not look like us, but make them a part of our community, because we share this place, we all share the same suffering, the damages that happened to me, that happened to the communities of color in Oregon, across the nation, it's suffering that you all go through. And if it doesn't keep you up at night, then I think you need to start drinking more coffee. So, but thank you for having me a part of this, and I look forward to justice, because it's gonna happen.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Cameron. Thank you for teaching us about the wide umbrella that is reproductive justice and why we need to be paying attention to transphobia, why we need to be paying attention to stigma and to gentrification and to state violence. This is all about the way that we live in our bodies, the freedom that we have to reproduce or not reproduce, or to raise our children in safe and healthy environments. So thank you for teaching us so much. I invite you to take up that piece of yarn or material one more time. As we anticipate leaving this place, I will invite you in a few minutes to file up, and we're gonna make a weaving. There's a small loom right here. We're gonna weave it all together. But there's sort of one more kind of wondering that I would love to do with you before we do that. So as you hold this piece of material in your hands that has been changed by your pulse and by your knots and emboldened with your vision and contributions, this piece that is common in this room and yet distinct from the others, let us take one more moment to bless this piece of material with our dreams for the future. As we envision the future of the reproductive and sexual justice movements, what is yet a mystery to you? What do you wonder about? What dreams has your imagination yet to dream? What freedom do you not yet know we might gain? What must we do? Who must we meet? Who will our teachers need to be? When will be the day that we come to take our place next to them and move forward towards the future? Imagine that your piece of yarn or ribbon, imagine that one end is tied around you and that the other end stretches far in front of you, far in front of us, and is tied to someone whom you have yet to meet. Someone's story that has perhaps yet to unfold. Yet your string is tied to them in significant and subtle and perhaps unknown ways. and now know that your piece of yarn is tied to them and tied to you, and it flutters behind you, behind all of us. The end is caught by someone who will come after us, a bright-eyed, visionary, and brave soul, and she ties it around herself too. Thank you. I invite you, as you are willing and able, to come up and place your piece of fabric in the weaving, and there'll be people to help you, and if you want to cut off a little piece of it to take home with you, that's cool too. We'll have scissors. So just as you're willing and able. Thank you.
What beauty we have woven together. May we bless this weaving, this representation of our stories, of the stories that were so bravely shared with us today, and the stories that are known only in each of your hearts. May we bless the families, the stories of the children that were never born, the stillbirths, the miscarriages, the abortions, the struggles with infertility. May we bless the children of the families given to others to raise through adoption or foster care or through forced state intervention. May we hold in the hearts the children who we birthed and who we have lost, either through death or disease or heartbreak or drugs or violence. May we hold in our hearts the children we have blessed to continue to nourish. May we bless this weaving with the words of Judy Chicago that she wrote more than 40 years ago, and to acknowledge that I have changed the binary references. Judy Chicago wrote with the dinner party a poem called The Merger. And then all that has divided us will merge. And then compassion will be wedded to power. And then softness will come to a world that is harsh and unkind. And then all genders will be gentle. And then all genders will be strong. And then no person will be subject to another's will. And then all will be rich and free and varied, and the greed of some will give way to the needs of the many, and all will share equally in the earth's abundance. And then all will care for the sick and the weak and the old, and all will nourish the young, and all will cherish all of life's creatures, and then all will live in harmony with each other and the earth, and then everyone will be called Eden once again. The very first words that the Bible says that God said to those new humans, those first words, be fruitful and multiply. In other words, go have sex. And at the end of Genesis 2, in the garden, Eve and Adam join as one flesh, and the last words of Genesis 2, they were naked and not ashamed. And so these first two acts of creation in the Bible establish our call for sexual and reproductive justice, that our sexuality is a gift to be celebrated and to be exercised wisely, that our bodies are good, that we are created for pleasure, that we need companions and helpers and lovers on our life's journey, that we are to be good stewards of the gift of our sexuality and of this creation. But be fruitful and multiply is not just a call to procreate, but a call to use our time on this earth to be creative, to be recreative, to be co-creators of the world that we seek. We indeed are the ones we have been waiting for. As the theme of this GA says, we are creating a new world. How joyful it is to celebrate the twin Supreme Court victories of healthcare and marriage equality. To take this new statement that someone raised their hand at a session in 2011, or maybe, Carol, it was 2012, and said, is it time for a new statement on reproductive justice, to the affirmation by our entire General Assembly. How joyful to celebrate the work, and I look around this room and see so many people who worked for this time. To celebrate the work of all of us who have worked so hard to help the UUA reach this moment of affirming sexual and reproductive justice. But you know, and my blessing is that we are not done. You say that with me? We are not done. And so I bless this weaving. I bless the leaders that are here. I bless each of you, each of us, to be courageous and strong and to take these commitments, these feelings of resolve and joy, this every burning need to bring justice back into our world, back to your homes. May indeed everywhere one day be called Eden once again. Amen, and blessed be.